Welcome to episode 59 of the Jambase podcast, partner of Osiris Media. Today, I'm joined by Jambase's David Onigman. How's it going, Dave-o?
Well, Scotty, small victories and little things to get excited about these days. It's like in the same day, you find out that California schools are canceled not just through May 1st, but the rest of the year. But then shortly after that, you get to listen to a brand new Phish Studio record. Yes. So taking little victories when we can. But overall, I'm doing good, doing far better than most out there. I've got a good work from home situation here, and we've been keeping ourselves very busy and occupied with all things Jambase. So I'm good.
Glad to hear it. And I am doing as well as being in the epicenter of this thing can be. And so much has changed since our last episode. As the coronavirus COVID-19 outbreak has hit all of us in such a big way. And back when we recorded the last episode, we were discussing the first tour cancellations, and now all the musicians are off the road. And today's installment of the Jambase podcast will feature our first We Are Everywhere segment, which contains my conversation with Washington Nationals pitcher Sean Doolittle about his love of the Grateful Dead, Phish, Goose, and other jam bands. And talk about taking place in a different world. It was just, I think, exactly a month ago that I went to the Nationals spring training camp in West Palm Beach, Florida. And it was an amazing experience. They did a great job of hosting me. I had a great chat with Sean, and hopefully that chat will take your mind off the pandemic for 20 minutes or so. But before we go there and get into We Are Everywhere, Dave-o and I are going to talk about some of what's been going on at Jambase. And as Dave discussed, a new Phish album that came surprisingly, Sigma Oasis. Now, Jambase has adapted to the situation, and we'll continue to do so moving forward. Not only have we launched the Jambase live streams calendar, where you can keep tabs and watch many of the great musicians performing live from their homes and safe spaces, as well as replays of great shows from a number of bands' archives, you can watch many of those live streams right on our calendar and toggle between them as if you're changing channels on a TV. Dave-o, can you tell us a bit about how the Jambase live streams calendar came together and a new feature that we just added this week?
Yeah, sure. I'll be honest, I actually don't even remember which feature it was that we added this week, but I'll try and just speak to sort of the progression of it since we launched it, which I think is under 2 weeks ago, probably well under 2 weeks ago. Was it a week ago? I have no fucking idea.
It's going to be over 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks from today. It's 2 weeks from today.
All right. I literally did not know if that was 1 week or 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks. That's great. Sorry for swearing. Except we swear on the Jambase podcast all the time.
We
right?
do.
Okay. Fuck okay. Yes. Cool. Okay. Fuck yeah. So it started, you know, it was as we were starting to see more and more tour cancellations and more people taking to sort of, you know, DIY live streams. It was like, well, we have a relational database already on Jambase. And sort of, you know, the anatomy of every upcoming concert that's in the Jambase database works pretty well for a live stream as well. So we got our lead developer, Todd Levy. Shout out Todd, who's been working his butt off these past 2 weeks. Just got to work on a new sort of query class and a new object type to define all things live streams. They, you know, if you think about a show in the Jambase database, it's, you know, a set of performances that take place at a venue, and those performances are assigned to a band, and they have a date and a time and ticket links and other things like that. This is largely the same. There's not really a venue, like sort of a show object in the Jambase database, but there is a band and a time and a date and things like streaming URLs and things like donation links. That was a really important one for us from the beginning, as we knew we were going to want to start embedding more and more of these on Jambase.com/livestreams. We wanted to make sure we were replicating on site any sort of donation information that you would otherwise see on the Facebook video or on the YouTube comments or things like that. Just being sure we weren't embedding a video that somehow didn't pass along the ways that you can support these great musicians that are playing these things. So at the very beginning, it was just kind of, the first day it was up, it more resembled like almost like an article of just like, hey, here's all of today's that are upcoming and, you know, can we expire them? And it was late night one night and me and Todd were like, this thing is about 80% great, but it's not really going to be a great resource for this stuff unless we're actually curating who is currently on air and who's not on air and sort of keeping it up to date close, as close to real time as possible. So then we sort of quickly built in little features that could make it say, you know, not only was this live stream scheduled to start at 7 p.m., it's currently still ongoing. And then sort of a couple days after that is when we got all the actual embedding working as well. So the first few days we had it up, it was more just like a calendar of what was going on. But then once we started being able to embed all those streams right on one page, that's when we started calling it more live stream TV, where you can watch Facebook's and YouTube embeds and livestream.com that Relix uses and lots of these different things. And you can sort of change the channel right there on Jambase. And they'll say, you know, if there's seven people on air, you don't have to leave the page, doesn't even have to refresh the page. You just sort of change which stream you're watching and the information changes. And that was probably like day four, five or six or something that we launched that. And then it was sort of, you know, we're all a little too focused on in the moment on this. And all these live streams are incredible to experience live. We're going to talk more about the power of listening live to things later when we talk about the Fish record. But these streams also, most of them don't go away after they're done. So then it was, all right, now we need to build a couple pages that are like the archive pages. So then we built out, you know, here is every live stream that took place on March 30th. And here is a page that is just for Brock Butler's performance on March 31st. And, you know, attaching all the correct schema information to that stuff. That's also a lot of stuff that's been going on under the hood. At Jambase, we don't talk a whole lot about the tech of how the site works on the podcast. So I'm just going to talk about that for another minute here. If you think it's boring, there's normally some skip buttons on your podcast on your podcast software. But like every show or band or venue page on Jambase uses this sort of universal markup language called Schema. You can learn about that at schema.org. So like the biggest users of schema information is Google. And, you know, a website like Jambase's uses schema to mark up things like concerts and venues with a predictable amount of structured data. And sort of the big schema team at Google started reaching out to partners like Jambase saying, here's how you mark up a live stream. Can everyone start using this type of object class to say if a show or a festival has been postponed or canceled or rescheduled? So it's all kind of stuff like that that we've been working on under the hood, sort of not just on our live streams product, but also just sort of, you know, on what Jambase's core functionality was 3 weeks ago, which was, you know, a big concert discovery database. And, you know, in addition to curating all these live streams, we're also staying as best we can on top of all show cancellations and reschedules and things like that. And that's all sort of information that's getting pumped into the system as we go here. I probably forgot something.
I think you did a good job of handling it. And what I was saying about the latest feature is the ability to look to search the archives for past live streams. And, you know, that's as easy as at the top of jambase.com/livestreams. When you go to that page, you'll see today's live streams. You'll see any that are online. And then at the top right there, it says upcoming, where you can see into the future what is on the calendar. But right below that are the previous days, and you go to a page for yesterday and you'll be able, if you missed a stream, in many cases, to be able to watch it right on the site.
And there's just tons of them there. It's just like when you go to the daily archive pages, it's like, whoa, we put up 52 live streams yesterday. It's just it's a testament both to the amount of DIY live streaming that's happening out there with the musicians, as much as it is also a testament to how much every employee at Jambase is working their collective butts off to keep that stuff updated. So, we're going to try to move on to other things. We have other big plans for all things video on Jambase that we want to start developing soon. But I think we'll probably do a few more things to make the live streams just a bit more discoverable maybe an actual search to search for them. Like you can search for things sort of in the global nav on Jambase, and a few more things to make the Jambase administrators' life easier as we curate that stuff in real time. But then we're going to move on to some other fun stuff as it relates to ways to browse video on Jambase. So stay tuned on all that.
Well, speaking of video, Jambase also launched Gimme Shelter in Place.
Right, right.
And that's a series of never before released videos from our archives that come out each weekday. And Dave's been working on that with Jake Alexander, and Jake also produces this podcast, and they're working together to comb our vault for stellar footage that we just started sharing last week. Included within are outtakes from our Songs of Their Own series from 2015, celebrating 50 years of the Grateful Dead. We also have video that was shot at High Sierra and during other sessions held at Jambase offices and other locales over the years. So far, we've shared performances from Ron Artiste to Keller Williams, Jennifer Hartswick, Nick Casarino, Reed Matheson, and Cochran McMillan, and more. Dave, can you tell us a little bit about that and how that came together?
Yeah, I'll try to be a bit more succinct than last time you kicked it to me. you basically covered it. We've been sitting on, primarily Jake. Jake has recorded, I'm there, and I guess I get to call myself a co-producer on stuff we do together. But it's Jake that does all the hard work. Whether it was Songs of Their Own or 20 years later or just stuff where we had video gear present, like at High Sierra, there's a lot of stuff in the archives that either is like, Reed and Cochran came into our office and played five tunes and we only ever published one, or, we had some GoPros and some Telefunkens. Shout out Telefunken. Thanks for the mics. We're using them right now on this podcast, too. And we just, had our gear laying around at High Sierra. And it's like, well, we like to record things and see how they turn out. So some of that footage from the sort of underground unofficial stage at High Sierra looks awesome that we haven't really published much of before, and outtakes. And yeah, I don't know. I frankly wanted to get Jake some work. and we always talk about trying to dig through the archives, and it seems like. Now more than ever, everyone could use more never before seen video content, sort of as a daily new fresh vid. So, it's not a live stream, but if you haven't seen it, it's new to you. So, that's Gimme Shelter in Place. We're going to see just how long we can keep it going till we just run out of stuff in the archive. So we'll see how far we go. Hopefully live music returns as a regular thing in society before we diminish the full extent of the Jambase archives.
I think we're all excited to get back to a normal way of life, both in terms of day-to-day and with live music. But these videos have been great. I get excited to see them when they come my way each day. So thanks, Jake and Dave, for that. And speaking of things that I have been excited about, on Tuesday night, the members of Phish surprised fans by announcing a new studio album. Sigma Oasis dropped through a listening party on Wednesday night and then was released digitally just a few hours later at midnight on Thursday. What a world. 2 days from announcement until the album was available everywhere. Devo and I, we both took part in a live blog as Sigma Oasis was played for the first time, and that was a lot of fun. And I think it's fair to say we are both fans of what we heard. Is that indeed fair, Devo?
Absolutely, though. I am not a good person to go to for sort of dumping on Phish's studio output. I really enjoy, to various degrees, every studio record they have put out. But yeah, I really liked last night's. As you mentioned, we were sort of kind of listening, but also running a live blog and on a Zoom call with some other people that were contributing to it and pulling in people's tweets. And I really enjoyed it. And I wouldn't take back that experience of listening to the record for the first time, sort of slightly distracted, but also manning the ship of something pretty cool, which was our little live blog that we did. But yeah, we pushed back today's recording, you and me talking, by a half hour. So amongst other things, I could listen to the record again. before we jumped on.
And what stuck out on re-listens that maybe you didn't share last night?
It's a good question. I think what stuck out the most on re-listen last night was I thought they really knocked it out of the park as far as being able to both lay down what they were obviously very happy about, which were raw tracks that Trey spoke to the fact that they weren't in isolation booths and they weren't in, playing to click tracks or anything like that. So they were able to get that sound that obviously Trey really likes to like have those raw organic bass tracks for that stuff, but like not bass like the instrument, just the tracks to play over, but also went to town on overdubs, primarily Trey and Paige. So they're certainly not the first record to be able to accomplish this blend of approaches, but the record has this feeling of it that you know because they've shared with it, like the tracks were all sort of recorded in a few days and all four of them standing as close together as possible and all the stuff Trey normally talks about liking doing there, but that didn't stop them from, say, like releasing the record like that. You know, Paige went to his house and Trey went to a studio and they got Don Hart to record strings and what we think is background vocals from some awesome people, but we haven't actually seen credits on that yet. So yeah, what stood out most to me was just they really did it as far as having like an organic in the studio feel and awesome add-on production value through the overdubs.
Absolutely. And speaking to that, it was I was hoping coming into the listening session that we'd get some new fish, that hear songs that we hadn't heard before. And when it became clear that that wasn't the case, I wasn't disappointed because I felt like it was fresh approaches to all of these songs. I felt like they had a new coat of paint on them, if you will. I thought Paige especially put lots of layers on with his overdubs, what I assume are overdubs, that really made it fresh and made it seem like if you're going to go into the studio and make an album, I don't think the idea should be to simulate your live show. You have the live show. It should be to get a document of a point in time of a group of songs. And I think they did a great job with that. I was also very surprised by some of the song selections. A Life Beyond a Dream, I had to go back and look to make sure that wasn't actually on the Ghosts of the Forest album, which it was not. And certainly Steam was the biggest surprise to me. I mean, that song is 9 years old at this point, but love what they did to it. And for me, I would say that the highlight of the album is Everything's Right. That album always holds a special place in my heart. I heard it the first time Trey Band performed it, and it hit just the right spot with me. And I thought they did a fantastic job in the studio, and it's one of the cooler studio jams we've heard from Fish since the Sicket disc.
They modulate. They modulate the jam in the middle of the studio take.
It's unbelievable. It was so cool to experience all together in this communal, everyone taking in the album, the Fish community in the same way, tens of thousands of fans hearing it for the first time. And, you know, thank you to Fish for giving us that experience.
I want to thank Mike Hamad for so quickly tweeting out what the modulation was. Like, not that I like really was doubting myself. I know what a modulation sounds like in the middle of a song, but I like said it on the live blog. I was like, did they just like change key in the middle of the studio jam? And then Hamad tweeted it like at the same time. I was like, yes, confirmation.
Absolutely. And I'm excited to hear it a few more times and take it in. I wonder how often I'll go back to it after that. I don't listen to the old Phish Studio albums that often, but in all the talk about Phish Studio albums, I'm kind of intrigued to go back and give Rift its first listen by me in years and, you know, perhaps hear it with new ears after all that's gone down. So it was really exciting, and it was a beautiful thing by Phish to do it. So with that in mind, we thank you so much for listening to the rundown. And now it's time to hear my We Are Everywhere chat with Sean Doolittle of the world champion Washington Nationals about his Phish, Grateful Dead, and jam band fandom.
Thanks, Scotty. Stay safe out there, everybody. Cheers.
Welcome back to the Jam Bass Podcast. I am at the National Spring Training Facility in West Palm Beach, Florida. Fit Team Park, I believe, is the name of the ballpark here. And I'm here with Sean Doolittle of the Washington Nationals. How's it going, Sean?
It's great. It's great. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. We're glad to have you on. And the name of this segment is We Are Everywhere, and where we talk to live music fans from all different walks of life. And no better way to kick it off than with a Major League Baseball player. And not only a Major League Baseball player, a world champion. And Sean, the Nationals won the championship last year. Does it feel any different this spring?
Yeah, it feels a lot different. It's still sinking in, to be honest. Everything, you know, that happens during a playoff run, it happens so fast, and there's so much emotion, adrenaline and everything like that, that it often takes a while for it to sink in and crystallize and feel real. And you know, being back at work with these guys has you know, it's just so much fun. And we're still to this day kind of sharing some memories about that run and talking about how things went down and all the crazy happenings that happened during October. And, you know, this year we're going to wear a World Series champions patch on our jerseys. And we get our rings the second home game of the season. So we're very much looking forward to defending our title and enjoying every last second of it.
Excellent. And also, I would imagine they're going to be putting up a banner at Nationals Park.
Cool. To see what comes of it and what they have planned. You know, our group will forever be the first World Series champions in Nats history. So we're very, very proud of that.
Yeah, excellent. I can only imagine. And did it feel like a much shorter offseason because you went so late?
Oh, yeah. And it changes a lot of your routines that you normally have. You know, this is my ninth season. So, you know, you pretty much have your off season mapped out. You know what works for you. And we got home from the World Series, finally back to our house in Chicago after we did some celebrating in DC and we finally got home. I think it was like the second week of November. And I typically, you know, I used to start working out around Thanksgiving. You know, I'd start playing catch like the first week of December, but I really needed to take a little bit more time off than that. So it definitely changed some things, moved some things around, but that's a very, very, very good problem to have.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, it was interesting when you guys won the World Series and you had the parade. Mm-hmm. I believe it was your wife that shared a tweet of one of the best moments of the parade for you was somebody was there with a Fluffhead sign.
Yes. Yes. We were on top of these double decker buses. And we were over in the staging area, basically around the corner from the parade route, waiting for the go ahead. And there were a bunch of fans that were lined up against the fence. And, you know, everybody comes with signs or they got their, you know, Nats gear, their World Series gear or something. And in the middle of the crowd was a guy with a yellow rectangular sign. It was very simple. And it in black marker, it just said Fluffhead on it. Well, it was awesome. It made my day. At that point in time, I hadn't talked too much about, you know, my love of fish and jam bands in general. But so it was like a super inside thing I wasn't expecting at all. And it was awesome. It was awesome. I thought it was really, really cool. And I'm lucky to be able to have, you know, connections like that with some of our fans.
And when did you start listening to Phish and jam bands in general?
I'm very new to Phish. I've only been listening to them for like a year. I've been listening to the Dead for several years. You know, music has a very special place in our house. My wife and I are both huge music fans, and my wife is a Deadhead, and she's seen more, you know, Allman Brothers shows than she can count, and a huge Rolling Stones fan, and you know, so that's kind of where that started. It was just kind of always kind of existed in the periphery for me, and then several years ago, I think it was like three or four seasons ago, I was really kind of having trouble managing like my emotions during the season, you know, just like the highs and lows of a season, that roller coaster ride that you end up on. And we were heading, it was my first year with the Nationals and we were heading to the playoffs. And I started listening to the Grateful Dead a lot more during that playoff run. And it really helped me chill out and relax before games. I found I was in a much better mental state heading into the games, chilling out before the game. And so, you know, still to this day, I listen to Box of Rain and Ramble on Rose before every game as like the last things that I do. And before I head out. And, you know, this year, as it progressed, you know, like, we still probably listen to Grateful Dead more than any other music in our house right now, but like, you know, it just kind of progressed, and Phish was always on like whatever music app you use. Like I use Apple Music, people use Spotify. It recommends different things for you. Sure. Based on what you're listening to. And Phish had been, you know, popping up for quite a while. And earlier in the season, I just clicked on it out of curiosity, you know, and I'd never really heard much or really any Phish, and I was hooked right away, man. It kept recommending Hoist first, that album. So like, you know, I talk to people now, and when it comes up that I was hooked in by, you know, Sample in the studio version of Sample in a Jar, it's like, oh man, what a noob, you know, like that's really beginner level stuff. But
that's how you get into
that's
it.
That's how you get into it, man. And I was hooked, and like I said, it's been really cool. A live one was really, really important to me during the playoff run last year. And I've enjoyed like sharing it with people because I realized like there's a lot I don't know. Like I'm so new, but I've enjoyed learning so much about it, watching shows on YouTube or live streaming some of the shows, listening to different, you know, shows from the past and kind of going back through those things and just kind of enjoying it and trying to take it all in. I know that I have a lot to learn, but so far I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it must be intense. I mean, with 36 years of history or 37 yes. years of history.
It's a little overwhelming. It is. And you know, much like the Dead, like they have such a catalog of shows and they have very much different identities in certain decades, or, you know, the early 70s for the Dead were so different than the late 70s for the Dead and stuff like that. Like it's very, you know, it's a constant ebb and flow and it changes. And I don't know. I just enjoy exploring that stuff. Right. And you know, the fact that Fish can go on like a 13 show run and not play the same song twice, like that's wild to me. And but still, as a fan, like, you know, you're still in for a great show. Like, you know that you're not sure what you're going to hear that night, but you know it's gonna be awesome. That to me, like, I think that's really cool. And like I said, like, I'm still very much a beginner, but I'm loving exploring that kind of stuff and learning about, you know, some of the weird things they do at their shows. You know, I've never seen a show. I'm hoping to get to one. We have tickets, you know, for one later this summer that lines up with our schedule that I'm hoping to get to. But, you know, some of the stuff they do at the shows, you know, I saw I watched the run they had at the Garden over New Year's and with the Clones, and, you know, Trey got stuck, you know, on the lift. I thought that's fun. But the community, the fan community seems really cool. Every band, right, has those fans that get super cynical about you know, and
just like in baseball,
sometimes they can take the fun out of it. But in my experience so far, the fans I've interacted with on social media or just around, you know, around baseball, like, fans come over and we start talking about it, and it's just been a fun experience.
Yeah, excellent. Are there any other players that you've met that are to...
No.
Yeah.
No. Although, like, Wilson Ramos, who actually he played for the Nationals several years ago, and now he's the catcher for the Mets. He does use Wilson as his walkout song. The beginning, the chant that happens in the beginning of the live version of the song. I don't know, actually. I'm not sure which version it is or which show that it's from, but he's used it for the first at bat of every home game for the last several seasons, going back to when he was in Washington. So I think that's cool. I don't necessarily think he's a fish head, but I think that's cool. But as far as like baseball goes, not a lot of guys, there's not a ton of overlap there. So I sneak it on in the weight room every once in a while, and sometimes I can get a few songs on before it gets changed.
But what kind of reaction does it get generally?
Just, you know, like, you know, Doolittle's at it again. Like, what is this stuff? You know, some guys, that's not their ideal workout music, but, you know, got to keep the boys on their toes.
Exactly. Speaking of Wilson, you showed off a few months ago, really cool glove that you had Wilson Sporting Goods make for you. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that glove?
Yeah, so after the season last year, my deal was up, my equipment deal was up, and I switched and joined the Wilson family. So this is my first year wearing Wilson gloves, and I was really excited to come on board because they have an awesome ability to create custom gloves. Like, they're kind of known for doing some really cool stuff. And, you know, I enjoy showing some of that personality and trying to make things a little bit more fun. And, I thought it was only natural that my first glove, you know, I couldn't help myself take advantage of Wilson, and I wanted to do a fish themed glove. So We use some brighter colors for the laces and the embroidery. There's like some teal and some neon green and some yellow and blues, and you know, the glove is a solid brown. So like those laces and some of those that embroidery really pops. And on the thumb of the glove, it says Duke of Lizards, and on the back side of the glove along the pinky, it says Punch You in the Eye. So singing, oh Wilson, someday I'll kill you till you die. Oh Wilson, punch you in the eye. Hey! I stuck with the Wilson theme, and Like I said, there's not a lot of my teammates really get it. They like the colors and stuff like that. But I've had fun. You know, a lot of fans have kind of latched onto it, and it's just like it's been one of those cool things to share with people. And you know, I think one thing that is good for the game is when you have players kind of showing a little bit of personality and some of the stuff they're passionate about off the field. When you get that overlap, you know, it can really help to grow the game and you know, bring new fans into the fold.
Absolutely. And as a former Roberto Clemente Award winner, that's something that you've known for. And it's really admirable, some of the things that you've done, like buying tickets for the LGBT community for Pride Night in Oakland, which is where Jam Base is headquartered at.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's really impressive what you've done. And it's so nice to have someone like that associated with the fish scene. So, you know, I want to share our appreciation.
I really appreciate that.
For that. What are some of your favorite fish songs these days that you've been going back to?
So I think Punch You in the Eye is my favorite. And I hope none of this, by the way, is like sacrilegious. Like I said, like I know I'm still very much learning fish. So if anybody, I hope nobody's yelling at their radio. But like, I know it's a cover, but some of their versions of Loving Cup are like some of my favorite stuff that they've done. I think it has a special place in my heart because my wife is such a big Rolling Stones fan.
Sure.
So it's at the center of like both of our Venn diagrams right now. Like it's something we can both agree on, you know? So, but like I go through, I guess kind of like, I don't know if like different phases, but like my wife's favorite fish song is Chalk Dust Torture. So that gets played a ton in our house.
Excellent.
But like, some of my favorite, cause I listen to it around here, right? When I'm going through like some workout stuff, and like, I love when like Divided Sky or Bowie or Gaiuti come on and they have like a tweezer that if you enjoy myself. I know these are like kind of like the classic, almost like commercial hits, if you will, but like just the long instrumentals and the jams, like when you're going through a workout, there you can really get taken by them. You're not really listening to any words, but like the music, I don't know. There's a meditative aspect to it.
Sure.
That I really like, I don't know. I really respond to. And, but like the thing about listening to Fish is like all their live shows are like a lot, they're so different, like the lineups. So like what I was doing when I was first listening to the group, when I was first getting started, is like, I would find like a show, I would just click on a show and I would scroll through the track list to see if any of those songs were during the set. And I would just like, that's where I would start it because I wanted to hear something I was familiar with and that kind of, and then like, I would just listen to the rest of the show. And there were so many times where I'd be going through a workout or, you know, I'd be in the locker room and something would happen in the show or I'd hear a new song and I'd pick up my phone. And I was like, wow, like I got to figure out what song that is, you know? So like, but if you asked me in like a week, it would probably be, I could probably name a totally different collection of songs that I was listening to a lot at that time. So
I think that's something that all fans go through.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it. And
Fee might be one of my other favorite songs. That's a deeper cut.
Yeah.
They don't play that one that much anymore, but that was another one of the songs I listened to a lot, like right at the very beginning when I got into it. So there's some sentimental value there to me as well.
And last question for you, Sean. You mentioned that before each game you listen to Ramble on Rose and what was the other song that you,
Box of Rain.
And Box of Rain. Which versions of those songs, or does it change?
The Ramble on Rose version changes, but this you know, the studio cut of Box of Rain off the American Beauty album is my favorite. So just a box of rain. you know, they didn't play it that much live.
Right.
And, but again, that's another one like, that I listened to a lot when I first started to get into the Dead and, you know, so you make these connections with some of this music and it takes you back to a certain time where, you know, like when I first started listening to it, it was like after I got traded over here in 2017 and I was such like a nervous ball of energy because I was the new guy on a really good team. I just got traded over here. The team was heading to the playoffs. I didn't want to mess anything up. Right. So like, you know, listening to that stuff, you know, calming down, loosening up a little bit and then going out and having success. Like there's a lot of positive vibes associated with that song. And it's such a beautiful song that it really calms me down. But, you know, going from the Dead, I think, to Fish is a natural progression. And you know, even from Fish, I've started to expand even more from there. So
into what, which bands, sir, have you been listening to?
Goose. You guys know Goose?
We love Goose.
So Goose and Billy Strings, you know, I enjoy a lot right now. Billy Strings been getting a lot of play so far during spring training, on my ride in and, Goose to mellow out on the way home sometimes. You know, there's so much really cool stuff going on right now, and I feel like in that community, artists really, you know, they take note of what other groups are doing, and there's a mutual respect there, and I think it's been a really cool, you know, kind of genre to really start to explore a little bit more.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time, Sean. I'm excited to hear about how your first show goes. So keep us posted.
Fingers crossed, man. It's not till August, so a lot can happen between now and then, but fingers crossed that it all works out. And I can check that off my bucket list.
Excellent. Thanks again for your time.
All right.
That's it for this episode of the Jambase Podcast. Thanks to Jake Alexander for producing, as always, and thanks to you for listening. We'd also like to thank Telefunken for the mics and Clangin' and Bangin' for the music, and Sean Doolittle of the Washington Nationals for taking the time to invite me to spring training and have such a fun chat with him. Thanks again for listening, and everyone stay safe out there, stay sane, enjoy streaming live music like you used to enjoy going to see live music.